a possible turning point between Israel and Hamas.
Today, the mastermind of this day of sheer evil is no more.
The world reacts to Sinwar's death.
Today, Israel confirmed that Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, is dead. And justice has been served.
Plus, climate change and mental health.
The pessimism and uncertainty and helplessness, they say they don't know what the future will look like.
Today is Friday, October 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition.
I'm Alexis Strope.
And I'm Steve Karish. Our top story today is from Israel.
Today, the mastermind of this day of sheer evil is no more.
That's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu delivering the news that Yahya Sinwar has been killed in a firefight with Israeli soldiers. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant confirmed the killing of the Hamas leader and called on Gaza residents to free the hostages and surrender. Gallant called Sinwar, the architect of the October 7th attack, a terrorist and a murderer who killed women, children, and the elderly. Netanyahu said that Israel will continue to fight the Islamist militant group Hamas in Gaza until the remaining 101 hostages are released.
While this is not the end of the war in Gaza, it's the beginning of the end. To the people of Gaza, I have a simple message. This war can end tomorrow. It can end if Hamas lays down its arms and returns our hostages. Hamas is holding 101 hostages in Gaza, who are citizens of 23 countries, citizens of Israel, but citizens of many other countries. Israel is committed to doing everything in our power to bring all of them home. And Israel will guarantee the safety of all those who return our hostages. But to those who would harm our hostages, I have another message. Israel will hunt you down and bring you to justice.
There's been no official comment from Hamas, but sources in the group said the indications suggest that Sinwar had been killed during an Israeli operation near Tal el-Sultan in southern Gaza. Following the news breaking that Sinwar had been killed, U.S. President Joe Biden said he'll send Secretary of State Antony Blinken to the Middle East in the coming days.
Meanwhile, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris called Israel's killing of Sinwar a step forward toward eliminating the threat Hamas poses to Israel.
Today, Israel confirmed that Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, is dead. And justice has been served. And the United States, Israel, and the entire world are better off as a result. Sinwar was responsible for the killing of thousands of innocent people, including the victims of October 7 and hostages killed in Gaza. He had American blood on his hands. Today, I can only hope that the families of the victims of Hamas feel a sense and measure of relief. Sinwar was the mastermind of October 7, the deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. A terrorist attack that killed 1,200 innocent people and included horrific sexual violence and more than 250 hostages taken into Gaza, including seven Americans, living and deceased, who remain in captivity. A terrorist attack that triggered a devastating war in Gaza, a war that has led to unconscionable suffering of many innocent Palestinians, and greater instability throughout the Middle East.
Like Netanyahu, Harris sees this as an opportunity to bring the war to an end.
Hamas is decimated and its leadership is eliminated. This moment gives us an opportunity to finally end the war in Gaza. And it must end such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination. And it is time for the day after to begin. Without Hamas in power, we will not give up on these goals, and I will always work to create a future of peace, dignity, and security for all. I thank you all.
That's Democratic presidential candidate Harris. As of this recording, the Republican presidential candidate, former President Donald Trump, has yet to comment. Sinwar's death represents a major boost to the Israeli military and Netanyahu after a string of high-profile assassinations of prominent leaders of its enemies in recent months. President Biden said Thursday the death of Sinwar is an opportunity for a political settlement between Israelis and Palestinians. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wuttikusaara has more.
For years, as Hamas top leader in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar built up the militant group's military capabilities. Since the U.S. designated terror group's attack on Israel on October 7, 2023, Sinwar has been hiding in tunnels like this one. But on Thursday, Israel said they killed Sinwar in an operation in South Gaza. They released a video showing what they said was his final moments. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu:
to the people of Gaza, I have a simple message. This war can end tomorrow. It can end if Hamas lays down its arms and returns our hostages.
President Joe Biden was en route to Germany when the news broke. He called Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to congratulate him on getting Sinwar.
Now's the time to move on. Move on, move toward a ceasefire in Gaza. Make sure that we move in the direction that we're going to be in a position to make things better for the whole world.
Israel's military campaign has targeted Hamas leadership, but has also killed tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians. Families of Israeli hostages still held by Hamas say Sinwar's killing brings more urgency for a ceasefire deal. Orna Nutra, mother of Israeli-American hostage Omer Nutra:
their lives are in great danger now, more than ever. We're calling on the Israeli government and the U.S. administration to act swiftly and do whatever is needed to reach a deal with the captors.
But despite increased pressure on the Netanyahu government, ending fighting in Gaza may not be Israel's main focus right now. Political analyst from Bar-Ilan University, Jonathan Rinhold, via Skype:
Israel's focus and America's focus is in Lebanon because there's opened up an opportunity to weaken Hezbollah greatly. And this is something that all the American allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, etc., are very interested in.
Battered by a year of Israel's military campaign, Gazans say Sinwar's death will unlikely end the year-long war. As Israel hunts down Hamas militants, UN experts say over 1.8 million people, almost 90% of Gaza's population, are experiencing crisis levels of hunger. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
So, no doubt the death of Sinwar represents a turning point of sorts. For some context and a look what might happen next, I'm joined by VOA's Ricky Rosen in Tel Aviv. What do we know about how he was killed? When did it happen? Where did it happen? That sort of thing.
So, Sinwar was killed yesterday, Wednesday, when a group of Israeli soldiers identified three Hamas fighters, armed fighters, and shot them. They were unaware that he was among the three until today, when they approached the bodies and thought that he looked familiar. They took his body into Israel, and they did. They confirmed his identity through dental records, because he was many years in an Israeli prison, and DNA analysis. And so they just announced earlier this evening that it was, in fact, he who had been killed. And they just released drone footage of a drone that had been sent after the three men were shot into the house where they had been shot, that shows Sinwar critically wounded, throwing a stick at the Israeli drone before he died.
How popular a figure was Sinwar with the Palestinian people?
It's unclear. There are people now in Gaza who are mourning his demise. People also in the West Bank who are mourning him, and they say that there are many people who are celebrating because they fault him with bringing on the Israeli reaction to the Hamas massacre of October 7th. And so they fault him for bringing on the mass death and destruction that that Gaza has suffered in the last year.
And he was also apparently pretty brutal to his own people, no?
Right. He was, another one of his close associates, who was assassinated a few months ago, were in charge of an internal security apparatus that went after who they identified as Palestinian collaborators with Israel. And he was called the butcher because of all the Palestinians who he butchered.
So overall, would you say the mood in Israel now is one of relief or apprehension, waiting to see what happens next?
I think the immediate aftermath it depends on the reaction of the negotiators for the hostages, because it's being said by the hostage families, by the defense minister Gallant, and by Prime Minister Netanyahu, that now is a chance, and it's a very narrow window of opportunity to try to get the hostages out. There's the fear that the people in Gaza who have been working with Sinwar and would be enraged by his assassination could take out their anger at the hostages who are still under their control and just execute them. And so it's seen as an urgent mission to try to convince the Hamas members in Gaza who are holding hostages or know the location of hostage bodies to give them up now. There are plans to offer them safe passage to third countries and even money if they will give up the locations of live and dead hostages.
We'll leave it there for today. Ricky Rosen for VOA in Tel Aviv. Ricky, thanks so much for your reporting. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you, Steve.
The killing of Hamas leader Sinwar has sparked renewed hope in Washington that the conflict that has ravaged Gaza and set the Middle East on the brink of a regional war could give way to a potentially peaceful resolution. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
Celebrations in Israel giving way to more somber praise in Washington.
This is clearly a significant development and a major counterterrorism achievement.
Pentagon spokesman Major General Pat Ryder saying an end to fighting must now be in sight.
It does present an opportunity here for a ceasefire. It presents an opportunity for the release of all the remaining hostages.
And there are hopes that the death of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, the architect of the October 7th terror attack, will give Israel's government the leeway to make a deal. U.S. officials say they're redoubling their efforts to, quote, chart a new path forward for Israel and Gaza. Only obstacles remain, as Hamas must now scramble to fill the leadership void.
In the short term, this will create, I believe, a degree of chaos on the ground.
Reis Alamari, a senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and a former negotiator for the Palestinian Authority, also sees an eventual opening as control of Hamas likely shifts back to its officials residing in Qatar.
They are more keen on, let's just say, cashing in and getting what they can and reaching a deal and trying to get some benefits from it.
And if they can exert control over Hamas followers in Gaza, he believes there's a chance for a ceasefire deal and a return of the remaining hostages. But there are other potential tripwires, including potential reaction from Iran and Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
He'll be in a position where he has to respond.
Jonathan Shanzer with the Washington-based Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
Is it just simply a day of mourning and vowing to destroy Israel, or is there something more specific that he conjures up?
Still, U.S. officials are clinging to hope that there can be a peaceful resolution now that Hamas's Yahya Sinwar, described as the biggest obstacle to any deal, is gone. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
It's VOA's International Edition. Here are some other stories we're following from around the world.
The U.S. Treasury Department has announced sanctions against two Chinese companies accused of helping Russia build long-range attack drones used in the war in Ukraine. It's the first time the U.S. has imposed penalties on Chinese makers of drone engines and parts for developing and producing complete weapon systems in collaboration with Russian companies.
Police said seven people died and six others were injured after a suicide bomber detonated a device at a cafe outside a police training school in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Police say the victims included officers and civilians. The Al-Qaeda-linked militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the attack through a statement published on its affiliate website.
Fans, music industry figures, and fellow musicians are paying tribute to former One Direction member Liam Payne. The singer died at age 31 after falling from a hotel balcony in Argentina. Buenos Aires police said Payne fell from the third floor of the Casa Sur Hotel on Wednesday.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope, along with Steve Karish. President Biden is in Germany. We'll have a preview of his trip in a few minutes.
Turning now to the American presidential race and another visit with White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wita-Kuswara, the U.S. states of Florida, North Carolina, and Georgia are dealing with the aftermath of two major hurricanes that killed hundreds of people and caused tens of billions of dollars in damage.
States hit hard by Hurricane Helene in late September and Milton earlier this month are trying to return to normal, with power restored to most areas and ongoing debris removal. President Joe Biden visited impacted areas in Florida earlier this week, encouraging people to come together.
Not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans. Americans who need help. And Americans who help you if you were in the same situation.
It's hard to separate storm response from the politics that surrounds it. Studies show that voters reward the incumbent's party when the federal government comes through with disaster relief and punish them when it doesn't. Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris has been highlighting the Biden administration's efforts.
I have spoken with state, local officials, both Republican and Democrat, to let them know we will be with you every step of the way as you recover and rebuild.
While her Republican rival Donald Trump has spread misinformation about the federal government's response, claiming that it has avoided Republican areas and it used up relief funding to help illegal immigrants.
The federal government, on the other hand, has not done what you're supposed to be doing, in particular with respect to North Carolina. They've let those people suffer unjustly.
The Atlantic hurricane season peaks in the months right before the November election. For decades, officials have built disaster contingencies into their election planning, but now they must also deal with disinformation. Kim Wyman, Senior Fellow with Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project via Zoom.
Well, I think that's the biggest challenge that election officials in particular are facing right now in the aftermath of these hurricanes, because we are seeing on social media people making wild claims about, the ability for voters to cast a ballot, the impact that the hurricanes had on the election, and that voting will not take place now because of it. And so we really encourage voters to go to trusted sources.
Politics aside, with some roads still inaccessible, buildings damaged, and people busy rebuilding their lives, voter turnout could be lower. Storm damage could also impact people's plans to vote via mail, which is allowed in some states. Almost all states offer some form of early voting. Even without complications from Mother Nature, officials and activists have encouraged people to take that option. Chastity Malloy from the Georgia Conservation Voters Education Fund via Zoom.
It gives you more dates to cast your ballot instead of being beholden to election day only, because no one can really forecast if another major storm will impact our area or another kind of environmental crisis that may belabor our ability to cast our ballots here in Georgia.
With the race extremely close in two storm-impacted states, Georgia and North Carolina, officials in some counties have allowed greater flexibility to enable people to vote. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
A new study published in the journal Lancet Planetary Health looks at how climate change is affecting the mental health of young people.
It's more than just being nervous about an upcoming storm or wanting to stay inside when it's snowy and cold. Anxiety over the climate is affecting the choices young people are making about their future.
For more, I spoke with Susan Clayton. She's one of the study's authors and chair of the psychology department at the College of Worcester. So your study looked at the mental health impacts of climate change, correct?
Yes.
And that's going to be different from people who are suffering the people after the recent hurricanes who are scared, depressed, tired, the result of climate change. You're talking about the anticipation of changing climates.
In part, yes. So that's an important distinction. We're looking at how people are thinking about their awareness of climate change and how they're being affected by that awareness. Although, of course, if they've experienced an extreme weather event, that's probably going to heighten their awareness. So the two things are not completely independent, but we're really emphasizing just thinking about climate change and how that's affecting them.
And what about a feeling of anxiousness or anger at inaction from, say, politicians or corporations?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the really striking. We looked in detail at the different kinds of emotional responses. And I think anxiety was one of the ones reported by the most people at something like 60%, 60-something percent overall. Powerlessness, fear, grief. But anger was also very, very strong. And one of the things that was really, I think, an important finding of the study was their feeling of anger and frustration that government wasn't doing more.
Now, one thing I found interesting about the study is that the idea of a changing climate is in the back of people's minds when they're making decisions about how large a family to have, where to settle, where to live. Is that normal for other issues? It seems to me like people would always be making that calculation, no?
The overall way I would characterize it, the pessimism and uncertainty and helplessness, they say they don't know what the future will look like, but that they think it will be worse. That was one of the motivations for this particular study, was to say not just are you worried, but are your worries affecting your plans for the future? And you've probably seen earlier studies that have kind of highlighted this idea that people are saying, I shouldn't have children, or maybe I don't want to have children. And that's a theme that comes up now that didn't seem to come up in the past. But
well,
then these other, go ahead.
Yes. Like worries affecting plans for the future, I think, is part of life, right? And always has been. But are you saying now that these worries are directly attributable to the fear of climate change that's causing these lifestyle changes?
Yes, and I think you're making an important point, which is that worry is not a bad thing. You know, worry helps you plan. So if you think, oh, I'm worried about not having enough money to live, then maybe you will, you know, you'll work hard to make sure you get a good job, or you'll start saving, you know, you'll set up a bank account, save your money. That's a good thing. So we should be aware of the kinds of dangers maybe that the future presents. But it with climate change, and again, some of this is just what I hear people talking about. There's a real sense that the future is bleak, which is, I think, a different response than just I'm worried about war. War is sort of, it's a fear you can have, but with climate change, there's almost a sense that they expect the future to be bleak.
Susan Clayton is chair of the psychology department at the College of Worcester. And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope. Thanks for joining us.